The headlines this hour. Lebanese gather near the Beirut port to mark the first anniversary of a massive blast that had claimed over 200 lives and devastated the city. The Israeli military says it has launched artillery attack on southern Lebanon after several of rockets were fired toward Israel. Also on the headlines, a roadside bomb explosion hits a convoy carrying logistics for the U.S.-led coalition in southern Iraq. Thanks for joining us. Thousands of Lebanese have gathered in the capital, Beirut, to mark the one-year anniversary of a catastrophic explosion that ravaged the city in 2020. People rallied in central Beirut and started to march towards the city's port. They also demanded justice for the deadly explosion that killed over 200 people and wounded thousands more. The blast, which occurred last August, caused by the ignition of tons of highly explosive ammonium nitrate stored in a port warehouse since 2014. Several neighborhoods were also flattened. The Lebanese Prime Minister Hassan Diab also resigned in the wake of the incident. Since then, the Mediterranean country has been run by a caretaker administration. The Israeli military says that it has shelled areas inside Lebanon thrice in response to an alleged rocket attack. Israeli media reports say that the military shelled Lebanon three times in the span of 2 hours. That after three rockets were reportedly fired from Lebanese soil and landed in northern Israel on Wednesday, prompting sirens. The regime's military has blamed armed Palestinian groups inside Lebanon for the rocket fire, but no group has yet claimed responsibility. There's also been no reports of any casualties and damage. Over the past years, the Israeli military has repeatedly shelled areas within Lebanon, violating the country's airspace, prompting fierce criticism from Beirut. Israeli forces have demolished several shops belonging to Palestinians in the occupied outputs. Israeli forces, accompanied by bulldozers, razed to the ground about 20 shops in Hizma, northeast of outputs. This is the latest in a series of demolitions carried out by Israel against Palestinian homes and facilities in the occupied territories. Israel claims that the structures lack construction permits. This is while such documents are nearly impossible to obtain. Palestinians say that the demolitions are part of Israeli efforts to expand its settlements that are illegal under international law. Ryan Absalda joins us from Beirut. We're going to go back to that story that we have on Lebanon marking the one-year anniversary of its port blast. And she's there to tell us more about what is happening there. Well, Mariam, the one-year anniversary, obviously a very somber mood, I'm guessing. Tell us what you see and how Lebanese feel on this day.
Well, it's definite when you look at people here and you talk to them, you see that they're the memory of those people who died in the Beirut port explosion in itself is a catastrophic, as a very sad and tragic event in Lebanon, perhaps the most tragic event that targeted everyone or people from all sects inside Lebanon. You see that it's well alive in their hearts and minds. You see that people are still remembering that day. And we have, of course, here today, I think, a huge crowds, a lot of people that have come to remember this event itself. You have the families of the martyrs who say that they still have not seen any justice served, that those who are responsible for this tragic event, what led to bringing all those the ammonium nitrate into the port, the corrupt politicians that left it there, or the corrupt sides perhaps that left it there, and why this issue was not solved earlier, and the explosion itself, what led to that itself. There are so many unanswered questions after 1 year since this explosion. So it's very hard and difficult to speak to the families without them, of course, shedding a tear and talking to us about the fact that they only want to see justice served. They want to know why their husbands, their wives, their children, why they were killed during this explosion. Now, of course, all of this comes at a time when Lebanon is witnessing perhaps the gravest crisis in the country, in its history, perhaps not just in its history, in history of the world. This is was considered by the World Bank as one of the worst economic crises since the 1850s. So that in itself proves the extent of this crisis, whether it's economic, financial, socio-political, in all its levels, it is something that is not easy to go through. And at the same time, simultaneously, with all these protests that we see, with the many people coming here today to voice their support and their solidarity for justice to be served in the issue of the explosion, we also have an international conference that is being held and organized by France. There was a speech by President Michel Aoun during this conference, which was, of course, virtual, by the way. And he stressed during this conference that Lebanon is going through the worst economic crisis in its history. And this is a time when Lebanon is in dire need for reforms. It is in dire need for a government. And as you know, we are under a caretaker government and at the same time, an incapability of forming a new government. And of course, the fact that there needs to be development of the political system, of the economic system, the financial system. President Michel Aoun is stressing that there needs to be a formation of a cabinet. He hopes, and he said that he will try to work hard as much as he can to cooperate with the Prime Minister designate Najib Mikati to make sure that Lebanon does have a cabinet which could bring on reforms, despite the fact that there's a lot of skepticism from analysts, from the people, that this cabinet will not be formed anytime soon. A very significant issue that he mentioned is the forensic auditing, and that is something that is a problem with some of the politicians because it could reach institutions and it could even bring people who are who were power actually in the last 30 years to court. But the main problem that we're also facing is that we have immunity for all those who are ministers, former ministers, prime ministers, former prime ministers, even former members of parliament cannot be brought to court. Now, President Michel Aoun is stressing that no one is above the law, saying that he is ready as a president to go and be interrogated, to be in court, to be present, to give his take of everything in order to reach justice. That is considered a very significant step forward. However, this requires a law that needs to be ratified in the Lebanese parliament in order for these immunities to be lifted from all politicians, whether the current or the former, in order for them to be able to be taken to court and we can see finally perhaps accountability. So we're not sure if the parliament will be meeting anytime soon in order to lift the immunities of the members of parliament and politicians in general. However, this is a very tricky issue because you have sides that are basically blaming one side for this, trying to use the issue of the port for political gains. And we've seen this today with the fact that you have certain groups, specifically the Lebanese Forces Party, reportedly, allegedly bringing in arms to one of the areas where there were protests. And this is why security apparatus and the Lebanese army were quite concerned about what could happen next. Now, we had some rallies and protests on the area of the port where we have where the explosion took place, the close area, but we also have other protests that will take place near the parliament, which is perhaps a 15-minute walk from here, but that is where the concern lies, where there could be perhaps some tit-for-tat clashes between the protesters and the army or the security apparatus. So that is something that we're still waiting for. So far, it is generally calm, despite some issues that led to some problems, whether it was with differences in political views, differences in slogans. Some people have chosen to use political slogans in these protests instead of just focusing on the memory itself and on the mourning for the victims that fell in the Beirut explosion last year.
Thank you so much for that. We appreciate that, Mariam Saleh. Mariam Saleh there from Beirut. one-year anniversary of the port blast that has shaken the people's lives there in Lebanon. Moving on, Palestinians have attended the funeral procession of a young man who was killed by Israeli gunfire in the occupied West Bank last month. The funeral procession was held after Israel handed over the body of a 21-year-old Mohammed Farid Hassan. He was killed by Israeli soldiers in a village near the city of Nablus on July the 3rd. Palestinian media say that he was among those fending off an attack by Israeli settlers on the village. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry had described his killing as a crime and demanded an international investigation into his death. Iraqi security sources say that a roadside explosion has hit a convoy carrying logistics for the West-led coalition in a southern province. There were no immediate reports of damage or casualties. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack that happened in Diqar province. Last week, two other logistics convoys for the coalition were targeted in separate attacks in Diqar and Qadisiya provinces. Convoys for U.S.-led forces and American diplomatic compounds have come under repeated attacks in the past months amid rising anti-U.S. sentiments in the Arab country. The commander-in-chief of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says that the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan is a complete failure for Washington 20 years after its occupation of the country.
This is a complete failure for the Americans, who are returning to the point where they started from 20 years ago. The Americans have only brought insecurity to Afghanistan and created a dangerous situation, like a civil war there. Washington's strategy is to establish a country without any government there, and in that situation, only the oppressed Afghan civilians are the ones who bear the brunt of the wrong U.S. policies.
Salami said U.S. presence in West Asia violates national sovereignty and the integrity of the regional countries. He said that the U.S. has failed to change the security situation and the political spectrum in Afghanistan, and that is a reflection of pursuing wrong approaches for 20 years. The IRGC commander said that the Americans have never sought progress in any country, and they brought destruction wherever they stepped in. The UK Maritime Trade Operations say that a potential hijack of a Panama-flagged vessel off the coast of the UAE has ended. The security agency said the ship is safe, and boarders have left the tanker. It did not give any details in its warning notice. On Tuesday, maritime sources said the Asphalt Princess tanker had been seized off the coast of the United Arab Emirates. They accused Iran of being behind the incident. A spokesman for the Iranian military dismissed the anti-Tehran allegations. Brigadier General Abulfaz Shekarchi said that Israel and its allies from the region and beyond are waging a media war against Iran, using psychological warfare and creating pretext for adventurism. Sayed Ibrahim Raisi has been inaugurated as the new president of Iran. He has replaced Hassan Rouhani, whose landmark achievement was the 2015 Iran nuclear deal between Iran and the six world powers. President Raisi has promised to remove what he called the tyrannical sanctions, but will not base his economic policies on reliance on the West, in particular the U.S.
Ibrahim Raisi is now officially the eighth president of the Islamic Republic of Iran after his mandate was endorsed by leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, at a ceremony in Tehran. Ayatollah Khamenei's decree endorsed the presidential mandate of Raisi. The text was read out at the event by head of the leader's office. The ceremony took place at Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyeh in Tehran in full compliance with COVID safety protocols and was attended by the country's senior state and military officials. Raisi said, through their participation in the election, the Iranian people sent a message that they are demanding change, justice, as well as a fight against corruption, poverty, and discrimination. For his part, Ayatollah Khamenei called for a swift formation of the administration and said the country's conditions do not warrant a delay in the process.
The new Iranian president has not outlined his foreign policy in detail, but has promised to solidify and forge stronger ties with his neighbors. And on sanctions, he has made it clear that he would work to remove U.S. sanctions and would not link them to Iranians' livelihoods. Economic challenges will be a top priority for him, as evident in his acceptance speech upon being sworn in.
Raisi is the 8th president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. He won almost 62% of the votes in the June 18th presidential election and will succeed President Hassan Rouhani, who served 2 4-year terms in office. Raisi will take an oath of office in an inauguration ceremony at the Iranian parliament, or Majlis, on Thursday. But his new government is set to face a series of challenges. First and foremost, Iran's economy needs urgent action and medium-term planning to grow. Cruel and illegal US sanctions and the COVID-19 pandemic have severely hampered Iran's economic growth. Iran is also dealing with an unprecedented drought, which has negatively affected its energy production and its agriculture sector in certain parts of the country.
So Iran has survived the American sanctions. I think they can continue as long as they use imaginative ways of implementing the exchange of goods and services by different currencies or barter.
Raisi has pledged to prioritize Iran's domestic needs and combat poverty, unemployment, inflation, and corruption. But in order to achieve that end, a certain give and take on regional issues is necessary, and Iran can prosper by playing an even greater stability role commensurate with the country's pivotal position.
Well, in my view, I think President Raisi won't necessarily remove the sanctions. What he will do is increase Iran's ability to circumvent them. It's possible, for example, to use other currencies than the United States dollar to pay for trading back and forth.
Raisi has vowed not to repeat his predecessor's mistake of putting nearly all the bets on the nuclear deal and the resolution of foreign imposed sanctions. He said he will decouple his agenda from the nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Raisi has called on the U.S. to live up to its nuclear deal obligations.
I think President Raisi is talking more about countries such as Iraq and Syria and Libya and Lebanon and neighboring countries such as Afghanistan and Pakistan. I think that relying on Saudi Arabia and Israel and the Gulf states is a non-starter.
Raisi has said time and again that his government will solidify the relationship between Iran and regional countries. He's described strong ties with Iran's neighbors as important for the economy.
And that is for World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 1-9395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Families and friends were overjoyed at London Heathrow Airport on Monday, 2nd of August, after a travel route change meant they could reunite after 18 months of pandemic separation. "Very, very excited, it means the world," said Sue Blake, as she waited to greet her son, daughter-in-law and grandson, who had flown in from New York, and who she last saw 2 years ago. "It's a big chunk of his life, and I'm so thrilled for him that he can come here," she said of the eight-year-old. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Reuters News Agency journalists Guy Falconbridge, Ben Macquarie, and Sarah Young. The piece is titled, "It Means the World. Families and Friends Reunite at UK's Heathrow." Stay with us for more. Families and friends were overjoyed at London's Heathrow Airport on Monday, 2nd of August, after a travel route change meant they could reunite after 18 months of pandemic separation. "Very, very excited, it means the world," said Sue Blake, as she waited to greet her son, daughter-in-law and grandson, who had flown in from New York, and who she last saw 2 years ago. "It's a big chunk of his life, and I'm so thrilled for him that he can come here," she said of her eight-year-old grandson. Watching the hugs and tears in the arrivals hall, Heathrow Airport's boss urged Britain to remove barriers to travel, not add to them, amid speculation that the government was poised to impose more rules. "Let's just make it easier now for people to travel," Heathrow Airport's chief executive, John Holland Kay, told Reuters. Britain, where the death toll from the coronavirus pandemic has nearly reached 130,000, reopened its borders to large parts of the world on Monday, scrapping quarantine for fully vaccinated arrivals from the European Union, excluding France and the United States. The reopening of the borders was welcomed by families divided by the pandemic and airlines strained by it. "It is really awesome," said 31-year-old medical writer Colleen Castro, after collecting her luggage. She and her husband had come to London to deliver some happy news to his parents. "It's been a really long time, and actually, I'm pregnant with my in-law's first grandchild, so it's really exciting to finally be able to be here and share that news with them." For travellers from Britain's closest neighbour, France, who must still quarantine on arrival in Britain due to London's concern over COVID-19, the opening up for other countries stung. "It's a bit scandalous for the French," said Alain Jourdain, just before he boarded the Eurostar train from Paris to London, where he will need to spend 10 days in isolation in order to see his children. He last saw them back in 2019. It is very complicated, in particular all the paperwork to fill for the UK government. And it could get even more complicated. The travel industry now faces a new headache, with the government set to issue a COVID-19 warning against holidays to Spain, according to the Times newspaper. We just need to keep things simple. We need to build confidence in travel, Heathrow's chief executive, John Holland Kay, said when asked about the reports of another rule change. Britain has one of the fastest vaccination programs in the world, but the government has prevented the travel industry from bouncing back because of its maze of rules and track record for making last-minute changes. Spain could go on a new category of risk, the Amber Watch List, meaning it could be upgraded to red at short notice, with arrivals from Spain having to quarantine in hotels. Meanwhile, Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson said on Monday, 2nd of August, that he wanted to get the travel industry moving again with a simple user-friendly system to allow for trips abroad without importing new variants of the coronavirus.
Discovering Islam.
After birth, death is the greatest event in every person's life. It is the most private experience of every individual that cannot be shared with anyone else. Their death is followed by the destruction of the body as we know. However, would that mean the total destruction of the person? Why do we die at all? What is the philosophy of our temporary life on this earth? Why is death so scary for many people? Is the dichotomy of soul and body true? And if that is the case, what is the soul and how would it leave the body? If there is one thing that we can be certain of, it's that we will die. Yet death remains one of the greatest mysteries that man has ever known.
There is a definition of death which doctors give us, which is when the brain waves or the electrical waves in the brain stop. That would be counted as death.
Scientifically, death is the cessation of all biological functions that maintain a person. Roughly 150,000 people die around the world each day, so it should be one of the most familiar subjects for all. Most people wish that they never have to think about it or face death, and they're even scared to think about it.
If you ask someone to enter a room and no one would be able to leave that room and come back and give you an experience of how it felt to go into that room, many people would hesitate to enter that room. In the same way, when it comes to death, many people who have died, and none of them have returned back to life to give us or share with us how they experienced that death, or where did they go? So it's a transition to, for us in this world, and for many, somewhere unknown.
The word death conjures up an idea of the end of things. When we use death in English, We say when something dies, it seems to us almost to mean that it is now useless. It can be discarded. It has no value. It has lost its vitality. But it's not a very good word, or it hasn't taken a very good meaning in that way, because in Islam, death is a transference, according to many hadiths, from one abode to another abode. It is like walking through a doorway. If you call a doorway death, fine. It certainly is not an end to life. It is a continuation to life.
You know, we can understand why people find it uncomfortable to talk about death. And one of the reasons is because of the intense love we have for the world. And death signifies a departure from these attractive, beautiful things of the world.
All cultures correspond death with frightening thoughts and images. The reason for that is because we look at it from the departure side, because we are scared to leave what we are very much familiar with to the unknown. However, if we were to see it as an arrival, we find it to be more of a blessing than a loss.
It's a shedding of clothes. It's taking, you can say a shower and cleaning the filth from your body. So in other words, it's an existential thing. It's not absence of something. Unlike what we are brought up being taught, or directly or indirectly, about how death is absence of life. No, life is, as we know it, is something that has different stages in Islam. So it's not that we have life and then death. Life continues. We just have to shift. We have to cross the bridge. Imam Hussein alayhi salam on Ashura, he would tell his companions that be patient. Death is nothing but a bridge where you're crossing to go to the better stuff, to higher levels of existence and life actually.
We are born for eternity, and death unfortunately is taken negatively as if it means the end. The Islamic explanation is that death is just a transfer. It's a gateway to enter the second, or the stage after this current stage. Stage one is this life. Stage two is transition between this life and the afterlife, the barzakh. Stage three, eternity.
What's important to realize is it's all like what we call the circle of life. There was the side of the human being descending from the higher up to dunya, and that's why dunya is called dunya, because it's at the bottom of the cycle. Okay. And then it will start to ascend back again to where it came from, and that's when the soul is separated from the body and the nafs goes back. Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un.
Yeah, Islam's picture of life and death is part of a broader process, part of a bigger process. It is simply a gateway into that which is to come.
Death is really the bridge that unites the lover with his beloved, meaning that, you know, man who loved his Lord, he now wants to meet his beloved, his creator.
Man is a traveling creature. He starts from a drop, to clinging mass, to a fleshy tissue, to a fetus, to a baby, to a child, to a youth, to an adult, to an elderly, and eventually to the grave. But is the journey going to stop here? Is this the end? Or there are other stations to this uninterrupted journey?
We have a verse in the Quran, يَا أَيُّهَا الْإِنسَانِ إِنَّكَ كَادِحٌ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ كَدْحًا فَمُلَاقِيهِ. O man, you're moving towards your Lord, you're traversing a path towards your Lord, and you will eventually meet Him. This shows that we're on a journey, and life is a journey, and it ends with meeting our Lord. Does this journey end with death? The answer to this is that if we look at what the definition was in the beginning of life, then we will understand that life doesn't end with death, And since life doesn't end with death and is continuous, then so the journey continues as well.
The baby's journey to the world is full of wonders, and the elderly travels to the grave is even more wondrous. Now, based on Islamic teachings, death is ripeness of the soul and its readiness to be picked and initiated into the wonders of a new life. It is the tunnel to a phenomenal world of wonders.
The death, as we know it, is not an end to life. Rather, it is a portal, a doorway into a new and more expansive existence. And indeed, as we move on in this journey from this dunya into barzakh and then later on to the day of judgment, we are constantly evolving and changing. We're not dying.
But where is the destination of this journey? How many more stations are out there? Where is the map for this long travel?
We're here for eternity. We're born for eternity, not for death. Yes, since death is going to take us closer to that eternity, then in a sense you can say we're born to die. But not we're born to die in the sense that we are born for absence of life. No, we are born so that eventually we will be transmitted from one level of existence in life to the next level of existence in life to eventually attain that eternity we were born for.
Some say there is no afterlife, but they only assume. And why should we follow their assumption? Why should we think that this journey should stop so abruptly? Why should man, this traveling creature, stop traveling? If he were to stop, why did he set out? Why shouldn't we follow those who claim knowledge of that side and listen to those who only assume?
Somebody recently sent me a picture of twins in the womb of mother. One of them arguing that there is no life after birth, another saying there is life after birth. So in the similar way, we are in this world. Those who believe, they are arguing there is no life after this world, and others say there is life after this world.
I believe there is an afterlife, but I believe it cannot be objectively proven. It is something which you need to go inward through introspection, through interaction with Allah, seeing the signs in your life. I believe the afterlife can be discerned from this life itself.
We started from that drop of water, and we are where we are now. However, for the final destination, we need more progress. The Quran gives us some preview of what we may expect in our progress into future. We have to be prepared for that great encounter, meeting with the Lord, the Creator. He wants to share with us what he has. وَبَشِّرِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ بِأَنَّ لَهُمْ مِنَ اللَّهِ فَضْلًا كَبِيرًا. He loves that you live beside him, pure and honest. فِي مَقْعَدِ صِدْقٍ عِنْدَ مَلِيكٍ مُقْتَدِرٍ. He's waiting to meet you and to live with you forever. خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا نُزُلًا مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ.
Death is an astonishing path through the world of wonders. Some people have had flavors of that adventurous dimension on many instances of near-death experience.
Near-death experience is a personal, involuntary experience in which the person will see itself outside the body and while in a condition of a crisis like an accident or a surgery, and the person will be considered clinically dead, but then eventually the person will come back. And in the case of the near-death experience, the person will have a recollection of what happened during this period in which he or she was completely considered dead.
In his book Life After Life, The Investigation of a Phenomenon, Survival of Body Death, the American psychologist and medical doctor Raymond Moody has compiled a huge data and presented extensive analysis on near-death experience. He's classified the experience of 150 patients with near-death experiences into several categories. Now, one group experienced that they left their bodies while they were absolutely conscious and could observe the efforts of the medical team. Another group felt that they were okay in a body different from their physical body. Now, Moody uses the term spiritual body for this.
In the case of the near-death experience, it happens when the person is close to death, or when this person is actually considered dead, which means no heartbeat, no brain activity whatsoever. So in this case, what happens is that the person will experience different things that we cannot see here, and the person will normally have some characteristics. For example, the person will hear sometimes noises that we call it intracranial sounds. It just happens inside of their heads. Then normally they see a tunnel. Many times they see a light at the end of the tunnel. So they float, or sometimes they just go quickly towards the light.
Other experiences implied losing the sense of physical time, peace and tranquility, confusion as a consequence of leaving the physical body. Another group reported that they saw a prominent religious personality in a body made of light.
Some others stated that initially they did not realize they were in a new body until they found out that the hearing and their vision of their relatives was too weak to see or hear them, although their own senses had intensified so that they could hear and see new things.
What these studies tell us is that firstly, our knowledge about human being is much less than what we assume. And secondly, we have to confess that our current scientific tools are inadequate for these novel areas of research. And finally, and most importantly, not everyone has the same experience of death.
يَعْلَمُونَ ظَاهِرًا مِنْ حَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا, the Quran says. People appreciate only very surface aspects of the creation. وَهُمْ بِالْآخِرَةِ هُمْ غَافِلُونَ. And they're oblivious of the expansive nature of what I have really created.
Generally, death is an experience similar to the birth of a baby, where it travels from one world to another. The difference, however, is that the baby cannot remember anything from its previous world, while the baby's soul is extremely astute and can feel the difference.
By entering into that realm, the soul moves one step closer to its completion, and its power to comprehend the realities of existence would increase. Hence, it is now one stage nearer to the final destination, meeting with the Lord. A meeting which is not like meeting of a person with another person, but meeting of two worlds.
The whole purpose of this worldly life, this transient, ephemeral and fleeting 70 or 80 years, is that we prepare our souls, we make them ready and fit for the divine proximity and divine neighborhood, so that we become the neighbors of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We become fit to have that beatific vision in paradise.
The soul is very difficult to define, but in a simple expression, it is what we call I, the one who wills, who decides, who judges, who loves and hates, the one who uses the body as a means towards its end. We usually think that these are functions of the mind, while the mind is a simple conglomeration of absolutely separate cells.
We have to see what defines a person. Is it the body, or is it the me within the body? when we're growing up as kids, we have that me in us. As we grow older, we feel that this same me that I had when I was a kid is still that same me. Of course, experiences are added to me, but the me is the same me. We can't fool ourselves. As we grow older and older, the same me again and again. So, does the person die? We have to see. The body will die for sure. The body is destroyed for sure. But the person, no. The person will live on. That me, or in other words, the soul, is going to live on.
Meccans asked the Prophet, tell us what the ruh is. What is the spirit? He said, يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الرُّوحِ قُلِ الرُّوحُ مِنْ أَمْرِ رَبِّي. They ask you about the soul, what it is. Tell them that the soul is my Lord's command. And that's all you can understand. You can't understand more than that. And of course, you know, when I say you can't understand more than that, you know, some people will say, well, we live in a very enlightened age of science and technology and information, and we have everything on our fingertips. But let me tell you, you know, the best minds in physics, the best minds in biochemistry, the best minds in genetics, best minds in technology and engineering and in every field will say to you, we only know this much. We only know this much of the physical world.
It is true that the soul knows this world by the help of body and its different organs. And if it was not for the body, the soul would have not known anything. It is as the Quran mentions, وَاللَّهُ أَخْرَجَكُمْ مِنْ بُطُونِ أُمَّهَاتِكُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ شَيْئًا وَجَعَلَ لَكُمُ السَّمْعَ وَالْأَبْصَارَ وَالْأَفْئِدَةَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَشْكُرُونَ. God has brought you forth from the wombs of your mothers while you did not know anything. He made for you hearing, eyesight, and hearts so that you may appreciate. Mutually, if it was not for the soul, the body would not have been able to do anything. Death happens when the soul leaves the body. The question is, what would the soul do without the body, which was its only means to every end? The answer is that it lives in another body.
When you die, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts your soul in another body. Now, let's say it like this. You have a body in the once you die as well. And you will eat, you will drink, and so on. Or you will be punished to an extent. So, and this is called the mithali body, they call it. Which means that you have that same shape and form, but you don't have material anymore. Okay? So you have height, width, maybe length, but you don't have that material. Okay? It's not something tangible. And that's why we, in this realm of life, we can't see those who have passed away.
The soul is the real us. The body is a vehicle. That's why when, for example, we look in the mirror and we say, I, we don't mean this body with its limbs. If we were to lose a hand tomorrow and look in the mirror, we'll still say I and mean the same thing. We won't say I less five fingers. So we have an understanding of the real us, who we refer to as I. This soul requires, depending on which environment it is in, a body of sorts, and there will be a more subtle body that it occupies as it moves on into Barzakh, and an even more subtle body that it occupies when it moves into the Day of Judgment.
Death is really a move from one realm of existence into another. It is moving from the physical world, the material world, the touchable world, the tangible world, into the realm of spirit, the realm that is spiritual, the realm that is beyond and above the laws of physics, really. Gravitation or material or physical things actually don't exist in that world. It's a world of its own, with its own laws and with its own way of operating.
That spiritualistic communication or spiritualistic sense is simply that sense which is not materialistic, the sense which is got that third component, if we may call it.
Rumi refers to these senses in his famous book, Masnawi.
there are five senses other than these five senses. Those are like red gold, while these are like copper. The prophets communicated with the angels through these senses, and the Prophet of Islam went to Mi'raj, the ascension, with his spiritual body, and heard and saw things by his spiritual senses. These senses will be activated for all after they die.
In this world, the soul is not able to manifest its true potentials. It is governed largely by the constraints of the material world around it. And it is an uneasy, if you like, passenger in the vehicle that is the body. However, there is a purpose to this existence, and the soul requires to have this phase of its existence. But it really, if you like, flies and flourishes once it is free from that fetter of the body, and that is real life.
The spiritual body grows with us as we grow in this world. In fact, we have one aspect of this rooted in the middle world, and that is why we can communicate with that world in our dreams. So in this world, we live in two bodies, but since one is like an image of the other and completely matched on it, we realize that. Now, these two bodies belong to two dimensions of the same existence. On the moment of death, the soul discards its physical body and leaves this world with its spiritual body. So when we talk of death, we actually talk of ourselves in a new body, a body which is much more complicated and much more magnificent than our physical body.
The awareness, the power of the soul that is available to it, even in Barzakh, is exponentially different to that which was available to it in life. Even the kafir and the agnostic and the atheist, their ma'rifah and knowledge of reality is much greater than any scholar who's alive now, because the veils have been lifted and they see.
So every one of us leave this world in a spiritual body. A body which is lighter, fresher, and more agile than the body in which we are living now. A body with a special DNA partially created by us in this world. But what type of experience is death? Isn't going to be the same for all? Join me in the next episode of Discovering Islam to talk about this in more details. Until then, peace be with you.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.